like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow.
Jackie Morrison, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
So you are in rehearsals, even as we speak, for Abigail's Party.
That's right. We open on the 17th, so we've still got about a week and a half to go, and we're having a great time. The cast, apart from being fantastic actors, are really lovely, and Shubha Das, the director, is just been great. So it's a very happy company, and just wonderful to be part of such a fantastic play.
And which role do you play?
I play the rather dowdy Sue, who is the who's Abigail's mother. So Abigail is having the party, and Sue comes to Beverly and Lawrence's house for the evening, thinking she's coming for dinner, but it's just a drink party, to get out of the house so her 15-year-old daughter, who I think she has a bit of a stormy relationship with, can have a party. So Sue looks dowdy from the outside, but I would say don't judge a book by its cover. She's a rather dignified, intelligent woman who just watches hell unfold in front of her with these other guests, and she just has to sit and put up with it.
And
you know what? It sounds awful, but it is funny. It is a comedy.
It is, and it's a very iconic comedy. You know, in the Alison Steadman started the role of Beverly, who's the hostess,
yes,
with the most frighteningest, I would say.
Yes. Well, she is. I mean, I've never seen the film or the play before I started this. Obviously, I've seen clips of Alison Steadman, you know, over the years playing Beverly. And yes, it's iconic. There's no doubt about it. I'm glad I didn't see it, though, before we started, because then you can just, you know, you don't have anyone else's performance in your mind, and you can just work through it yourself and try and portray the character in your own way, which is good. But yes, Beverly's character, I mean, she starts off so nice and, you know, so inviting. She's trying to be the good host, and she just can't keep it up. I mean, to me, it seems like the play is about expectations that people have of each other within relationships, and the disappointment and how people punish each other for that. And so while it is a comedy, there's a real dark undertone to it. So I think the audience will find themselves laughing, maybe recognising some of the behaviour from the characters and the relationships, and then actually probably going, oh my goodness, this has got a bit dark now. It's a
yes,
dark comedy, I would say.
Well, and I think we've all had those evenings where there's too much alcohol, too little food, and the dark side of the liver comes out.
It's so true. I mean, poor old Sue, the character I'm playing, she comes to the party thinking she's going to have dinner. So she has nothing to eat apart from some cheesy pineapples and a couple of peanuts. And then it's plied with gin, and she's so polite. She keeps saying, no, thank you, no, really, I don't. And they go, yes, we'll just give you a top up. And by the end of the first half, she's sick. Which is incredibly embarrassing when you're trying to be a good guest. But yes, and also we were talking about this the other day, arguments sort of blowing up at parties, and have we ever been in a situation where you see a couple really rowing, and if you intervene, and generally most people, I would say, kind of go, oh, and try and skirt over it, you know, and make a joke of it, and then that's what happens in this.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to get involved in other people's rows, really, do you?
Yeah.
But luckily, Sue manages to keep her dignity throughout the whole of it, apart from being sick. But actually, being sick is far better than the other things that happen. So, I think she, apart from having a terrible hangover the next day and being mortified, I think she gets out of it pretty well, Sue.
Well, depending, because we never actually meet Abigail of the party.
No.
So we don't know what's waiting for her at home, but never mind.
I know, but that's the thing. You see, because the people at the party, like Beverly and Angela, they're all saying, oh yes, this can happen at a teenager's party, and that can happen. And they're kind of putting their sordid ideas of what can happen at a teenage party onto what the way Abigail's party is going to be. And I think Sue is thinking, well, I trust my daughter, and I have to entrust her to try and be a responsible human being. I'm letting her have the house for the evening.
And it's certainly not going to be worse than what they end up doing.
No, exactly, it's not. And who knows, you know, I suppose it's for the audience, it's open to interpretation at the end when Sue shouts down the phone to Abigail. I suppose it's open to interpretation for the audience, really, to work out what's gone on. But yet it's really the people at this party, their ideas of what's going on, mm-hmm. it just are grotesque, actually. and it's difficult for Sue to keep calm about it, I would say.
Yeah. I'm glad you said about not having seen the role, because it with such an iconic role out there, it would be difficult to develop your own idea of it.
I think so. Yeah, I really think so, especially Beverly, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you say, she's iconic. So I know that Natalie, who plays Beverly, she hasn't seen it either.
Oh, good.
And she's just brilliant. Brilliant. It's great. The actors are great. And it is fun. I mean, yesterday we were trying to do a run of Act Two, and I just kept snorting with laughter. Because, it's, you know, they're so funny, the actors. It's great. It's really lovely to be part of.
Fantastic. And tell me a bit about the play, because Mike Lee, you know, very famously develops his work through improvisation and really working on the characters. And how does that then translate to a play that's now written down?
Yes, that's interesting, because of course there are, like you say, they've improvised it, they've devised it, so they will have a very firm idea of having worked for a long time on their characters and set it. What, for example, in it, Angela is talking about something being stolen from a party, an egg timer being stolen from a party, and that's all we see. But you know that those actors probably did a whole improvisation round it.
Yeah.
And so we have to kind of work out our own story of what happened for that. So yes, you do have to kind of reconcile certain things within your mind and make up your own ideas about it. But really, it's such a well-devised play, and it's translated very well onto paper, that it flows really well, so it's not difficult in any way to play it.
Wonderful. And I imagine through all that development work that the characters are very well developed.
Yes. I mean, I suppose, yes, they are. They are, which makes it lovely to play.
Yeah.
They're multi-layered. They're undertones and they're multi-layered characters, so it makes it great to play.
And tell me a bit about where you've been working, because I understand you're also a trained operatic soprano.
I'm not operatic. Oh. My family are operatic. My brother's yes. a singer.
Yeah.
But yes, I sing. I would say actually I'm veering towards mezzo now as I get older, but yes, I do sing. And since I've had children, I've done a lot more singing, done one night of singing jobs, because, you know, it doesn't take you away for a long time. And it's much more flexible. So, yes, I've really developed that a lot more in the past 9 years since having children, so I could be at home more. And I love it, yes.
Okay.
In fact, the show that I did just before I came to Leicester was called This Is Kayleigh, and we performed it at the Edinburgh Festival, and then it came to London Wonderground. I was singing in that, and then I also hosted it. But, I mean, we were only there for, was it 10 days? And I had the kids with me because they were in the summer holidays. And the brilliant thing about it was, you know, I was having to go and get my makeup on, and the kids would be there. And there was a little wooden small hut / theatre that had kind of freak shows in it. And so the guys in the freak shows would say, yeah, don't worry, the kids can come in and sit with us and just watch the show while you go and get ready.
Wonderful.
And my children were watching people, you know, swallow swords and kind of lift kegs of beers up with their earrings and all that stuff, and climb up ladders of swords, and I thought, this is going to damage them, but they seem okay.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. It's just there's a real, really exciting atmosphere around there. It was nice to be part of it.
Well, it sounds like, so you've come from, you know, a theatrical household at the very least, with
yes.
Is your father was an opera singer as well?
My dad is is a, well, not opera, I mean, he's opera, he could have been, but he's a, yeah, he's Scotland's leading baritone singer, really, and in the 70s and 80s he had his own television shows up in Scotland, and he's travelled the world singing, and Dad and I do shows together. In fact, at Christmas time we're doing a one-nighter of a show, which is good fun.
I don't think your children can probably escape it.
No, I wasn't really going to be doing anything else. Nobody pushed me into it, but you know, you were just immersed in it.
Yeah,
I was immersed in that. We all were. So yeah, it's lovely to be. It's lovely to be able to get to work. In fact, my brother is coming over to sing in that show as well that my dad and I are doing at Christmas. So
where's that show going to be?
I think, God, now I'll say, I think it's in Glasgow. I think it's at the Village Theatre at Kilbride. And I think it's called the Nearly New Year Show. It's in between Christmas and New Year.
Excellent. I think we'll get people to look out for that. Jackie Morrison, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
And you. Good luck with the show.
I'm going to go live my breakfast now.
Excellent. All right. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello.
I'm Donna Freed, and I'm here with Patty Niven.
Navin.
And we are here to talk about a play that you're in called Unidentified Item in the Bagging Area.
That is correct.
Tell me about the play. Tell me about your role.
Wow. The play. When I first read the play, when I met Louise, the director, I said, finished the reading the play, and I just said to myself, blimey. I mean, she's just 25 now, Sarah, who's written the piece, and it's just an extraordinary piece of theatre for somebody so young, and to have that kind of a grip on older women, of being somebody that young. Mm-hmm.
And the theme of the play is menopause, in a loose sense.
Sort of. I think it is loosely menopause. I think it's really all kinds of things. I think it's more like a midlife thing that's happening to Victoria. I think the menopause is one of the things. My character meets her in a menopause support I have to laugh because it's about as unsupportive as you could possibly get, this menopause group. But it's a menopause support group, and it's a brilliantly funny scene.
And who is your character?
Well, I'm Meg, and I'm from the north, and I do telephone sex. Meg is, she's great. She is who she is. It's as simple as that. She doesn't apologise for being who she is, and you can't swear on this, can you?
Yes, you can.
Oh, right, okay. And, you know, if you don't like it, you can go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. She's really that kind of person. One of her lines is, I'll say what I fucking want. And that's what she is like. She says what she wants, she does what she wants, and she makes no apologies. There could well be underlying factors going on, and antidepressants and all those kinds of things of whatever's gone on in her life, but it's not her story, so that's... It can be there, but in very generally. But she just is who she is, and which is possibly why Victoria kind of went to her, because she's somebody who has such a freedom about who she is. Meg is just a bit of a free spirit, and very very interesting, very funny.
Well, it's funny. Just looking at you, I'm looking at jewelry, I'm looking at earrings, I'm looking at hat, I'm looking at the mirrored surfaces. Does she, and you seem like you're a bit of a free spirit.
Yeah.
And does she, you channel that part of yourself for her?
In a way, I haven't, because she's very racist. And actually, in a way, I didn't have to channel anything because of the way it's been written.
And tell me a bit about the director, because you've done a lot of stage work.
Well, Louise is great. I have this theory that when two women connect, I don't think there's anything like two women connecting. You can meet a male director, and I think even two men, an actor and a male director. I think there's something about when two women feel that there's a connection. I think there's something extraordinary in that, be it a director, be it friends, whatever. And I felt that way about Louise. There was just something about her and her energy, her commitment.
And you bring your own special little patty power to it, don't you?
I certainly do. All I need is for them to allow me to wear a hat and I'll be away. Sadly, Meg is without hat. That'll have to be in the sequel.
Yes, there you go. Okay, well, getting to that, joining us is Jenny Ogilvy.
Hello.
And you play Victoria.
Yes.
Tell us about Victoria, and because this is really her story and her journey.
Yeah. And the playwright, Sarah Simmons, made a really active decision to have a female protagonist. And we talked, I know that Sarah has mentioned, and we've talked about in rehearsals, films like American Beauty or, you know, stories like that, where you get the man who has the midlife crisis and gets to be really cool through that and sleep with younger women and take drugs and all of the rest of it. And how, by comparison, there are relatively few examinations of women feeling distance from their routine at that point in their lives and just breaking out of it and beginning to question who they are. So I think it's quite extraordinary that somebody who is in her early 20s made that decision to explore that character. And what's a complete joy for any actor coming to this part is that she allows her to be outrageous, and she allows her to be very different in the way that she interacts with the different people in her life. And I think initially when we were rehearsing, I felt a little bit disconcerted. I was like, well, I feel as though I'm almost like a different person in this scene. And then we thought, well, that's okay, you know, because the person that she is when she's with Meg is different, you know, to the way that she behaves towards her son. So she's really, she's an incredibly assured writer. I mean, she, you know, she's obviously going places. She was long-listed for the Bruntwood Playwriting Award when she was 21, and now this is her world premiere. She's incredibly assured comedic writer of comedy. I mean, the first scene, which you'll be delighted to hear, opens, I choose my words carefully, at the gynecologist's. It's like something out of Joe Orton. Yeah, it's really bold and quite edgy. And then we go through all sorts of territory, and it reminds me quite a lot of something like Girls, the Leonard... Is it Leonard Dunham?
I forget her name, but yes.
You know who I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, so she's able to make the character truthfully, you know, behave badly or have moments of questionable, you know, make questionable decisions. Mm-hmm. But I hope you sort of remain interesting and engaging throughout her crisis, her messy crisis.
Well, and it seems to me like, you know, because masturbation, we've gotten through masturbation, but menopause, you know, until recently, it was like the final taboo. Like we did not, you know, especially in our youth culture and us wanting to remain youthful.
Exactly.
Like, don't talk about it. Like, don't look down. Yeah. It's not happening. Denial.
I know.
And it's really nice to see the embrace of it.
Yeah.
And the embrace of all these women who say, I feel like a different person. So when you say, I feel like that's a different person. Yeah. Well, that's what it feels like inside.
Exactly.
I'm sure you'll find it. Due time.
But already, actually, we've been, you know, really conscious of the fact that, you know, we've been saying, okay, the character I play is 50, there are some characters in their 40s, 50s, but how are women who are going, you know, who are in those decades, how do they perceive themselves now that they're not like my mother when she was that age? And I keep having to remind myself of that, you know, looking around on the tube and going, there's a woman in her 50s. She looks fantastic. You know, what is she thinking? How are people responding to her? And, you know, we've got a cast with four women, four men. All the female parts are in their 40s and 50s. And yet we're having, you know, we're talking about sex, being naked, doing this, talking about how we feel, but we're not having to be the 21-year-olds who are, you know, oh, we're so daring, you know, Generation X, talking about all this stuff. We're doing it from the point of view of women who, yeah, they, you know, they did that, and now they're in a different phase, and what does that feel like?
And what's the structure of the play? Because you've talked about it being in different parts.
Yes. So. It's essentially Victoria's interaction with the different people in her life, and there's one group scene with the women, and other than that, they are they're all with two people.
Oh, great.
And the sense that our director Louise has been aiming for. And we've got a fantastic movement director as well, who's making it really sort of dynamic and sort of surreal and dreamlike, is that it almost as though these, as soon as she finds out that she's postmenopausal, everything sort of starts happening and morphing and changing, and she's at the centre of this world that is changing around her. She's not entirely in control of her behaviour and the way that she's interacting with it, and this is being underlined by the way that it's all choreographed and lit and, you know, sound and everything. So that's been great fun to play with.
And that's interesting, because it's almost as if menopause came, as I would say as American, or the menopause came, yeah, as a diagnosis.
Oh yes, that's exactly,
you know,
how
it's like cancer.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. And that's how we've seen it.
Yes.
And experience, and have, it has colored our experience of it.
That's right. I mean, that's, it's interesting that you say that, because it's exactly how it's written in the end of the first scene, complicated by the fact that there is a sort of frisson between her and her gynecologist. So whilst, at the same time as she's feeling like a, you know, she might be an attractive sexual woman, he's sitting there giving her a diagnosis of being postmenopausal. And it's a very odd moment to negotiate.
Yeah. Yeah, that moment between being biologically viable,
yeah,
and perceiving that as attached to your attractiveness.
Yes, exactly.
And yet what you feel inside,
yeah,
you know, which is obviously, you know, inappropriate attachments to anything,
yeah,
that moves, you know, that is, that you aren't married to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
yeah,
a general theme.
Yeah.
I'm not saying personally, I'm saying it's a theme. Some people have experienced that.
I'll be working that in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some people may have experienced,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
But yeah. Wow, fantastic. And you're in rehearsals here at Conway Hall.
I was going to say, actually, that something that came to mind when we were talking about the menopause thing, it's lovely because we're playing it so truthfully, and when you're talking about the diagnosis of it, but it is that thing, because Megan, she starts it off and says, menopause is fucking shit. You know, because I'm sweating my tits off, and I'm peeing my bed, and I'm losing my hair, and, you know, these are the consequences of
that's
something
the fun
like that.
Part.
the sight, the fits, the this, the all that kind of, it does come with it, and it's kind of scary. And she, who's very free spirited, and I am what I am, or who I am, and you can all go fuck yourselves, actually says, "I don't want to move forward. I want to stay the same."
Yeah.
You know, so that she's really explored the reality of a lot. It can be a very, very, very scary thing for women to go through. Things change that you have absolutely no control over.
On Radio Gorgeous, we're trying to talk about it a lot, because,
yeah,
I think, you know, as I said, I think it is one of those final taboos.
Absolutely.
And especially amongst women, there's competition of not having gone through it yet. I'm like, oh, really? You're just 37? And yeah. I'm 55, and I still have my periods. You know, and there's, that's
absolutely
something that's also unseen, is that,
yeah,
there's...
And how awful are you for taking HRT, and you should do it naturally, and all... You know,
it's just like childbirth all over again.
It really
Jesus.
Is. And I was talking about it the other day in rehearsal, saying it's very like the way, thank goodness, Ruby Wax lifted the lid off depression.
Yeah.
Oh, no,
yeah,
let's not talk about this. Let's just pretend it isn't happening. It is happening, and we do need to talk about it, actually. We can be funny, we can be truthful, we can do all kinds of things with it, but let's not hide it away and then have to feel like second-class citizens.
Fantastic. Thank you, Patty. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your time.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Lovely to meet you.
And thank you for busting the lid off.
Yeah. It's going to stay off.
Yeah, exactly. Keep the roof raised.
This is just the beginning. Watch this space.
Exactly. Hatless. Go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops.
Well, first of all, welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Catherine Manners. Tell me about the play that you are in.
The 100-week arc, and the intriguing thing about it is there are three actresses, and we are essentially the same woman. The idea being that within all of us, we have a younger self, we have a middling self, and we have, let's say, an elder self. And the different parts of our life, we are perhaps led or influenced or manipulated by these different voices, dynamics, feelings, emotions within us. So it's a sort of exploration into what would happen if these three voices or souls were separated out and were given the opportunity to start their life again. But with the dialogue and with the opportunity, the possibility of maybe changing, manipulating certain events and aspects of their lives in order to make the outcome more desirable. So we have one who is sort of the young, hot-blooded revolutionary, representing the young, the exploratory, the adventurer. And then we have number two, which is my character, who is definitely a lot more reserved, a lot more nervous, and prime target in life perhaps is to achieve happiness within perhaps the frame of domesticity and normality. And then we have three, who is sort of an ally to both of us, but is perhaps maybe the more reflective of the three, and perhaps takes on more of a role of stepping back and facilitating the other two, and allowing us to come to our own conclusions. But it's very abstract.
But yeah, it's as you say that, because reading it on the page, I didn't get that as clearly and succinctly as you put it. And it really does make me think, you know, you go back and think some of the things you thought as a younger woman, and sometimes you think how silly you were, or how brave you were, or how bold and fearless, and then sort of moving away from that, and as you say, maybe wanting, you know, settling down, domesticity, and safety perhaps, and then maybe moving into some wisdom and saying, hey, no, get back to that freedom, you know, get, you know, kick out a bit, but be smart about it. And interesting, if you could, you always have that, oh, if I knew now what I, you know, if I knew then what I know now.
Yes, exactly. But I think the thing about it is that it rings true that, I think, for me, certainly, this idea, and the important point about it, I suppose, is that all of these three voices are absolutely vital at any one time. We must allow all three to be a part of us. And I suppose the play explores a bit what would happen if perhaps one or other of these voices was silenced, or perhaps what if one of us tried to go it alone. In another way, it's sort of exploration of a woman perhaps having a mental breakdown or a nervous breakdown, and certainly having a very unhappy marriage. But then if you go back and look at your life again, how much would you try to change, or how much would you try to reinvestigate with perhaps rosy spectacles, or with a rosy glow, and how much would you try to hide or to disguise yourself from how unhappy you were. It's the important thing, and I don't know whether it's completely obvious to the audience. I hope it is that we are actually the same person and not, you know, three sisters or whatever. about an hour and a, you know, hour and a quarter, hour and a half straight through. So hopefully it'll be a bit of a ride, you know, a bit of a fun and exciting and interesting ride.
Excellent. And how is because the play has been translated from Swedish, does that factor into it, or because you have a lot of theater experience, does it have a different feel to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting doing a translation because, you know, you might fall into the trap of thinking if something doesn't immediately, you don't understand something, you might say, well, obviously something's been lost in translation here, but that's very rarely the case. I've done one Swedish play before. I did a play called War by Lars Norén. Very, very different play. Very, very dark play about war. It's interesting because, stylistically, it's very different from anything that we could maybe encounter in British theatre. It's a very fast-paced, very witty translation by Frank Perry.
But it sounds like a very exciting play. It also brings to mind to me, though, sort of at different points in your life, sort of being how much of our lives is bullied by hormones, you know, and so how that plays at different ages as well.
Absolutely. And then how much we kid ourselves that we're happy. And you know, I make choices now or do stupid things or rash things. And I think, God, that was my number one speaking there. That was a stupid, infantile decision to make. And, you know, you do end up sort of breaking yourself. God, if only I could just be a little bit more mature. But certainly we all need that young voice inside us as well to remind us of that certain thing, you know, as we get older.
Yes, our inner rebel. I answered my husband in a... And I thought about it, and I was like, wow, that was such a teenage response.
Exactly.
Fantastic. And on that note, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Radio Gorgeous. Abigail's Party is on at the Curve Theatre in Leicester from October 17th to November 8th. Unidentified item in the bagging area is at the Old Red Lion Theatre near Angel from October 14th through November 8th. And The Hundred We Are is on at the Yard Theatre in Hackney Wick from October 14th to November 8th.
This podcast was presented by Donna Freed and produced by Donna Freed and edited by Caitlin Hobbs.